Ryan, I'm alcoholic. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be sober. I know a few years ago when I got here, those words didn't belong in the same sentence with each other. You know, I was never happy and sober at the same time. But I got sober April 28th, actually, of 2007. I just got to celebrate my third anniversary yesterday, which was a great honor. And this is my home group right here, Tampa Bay Young People's Group. And yeah, that is exciting. I agree. And, you know, a funny story is I actually came to Alcoholics Anonymous in March of 2007. And I first went to a Sunday meeting that a lot of people here used to go to. And I hadn't met anybody here yet. And I remember I walked into the room, and I came in late, of course, you know, and I sat down and I gave the room a once over. And I thought to myself, I'm the best looking person in here. And true story. And see, because I thought that if I could find a girl that was sober to take care of me, that my problems would be solved. And I wouldn't need, you know, the steps and a sponsor and all the stuff I had heard about, because I'd been to Alcoholics Anonymous before, and you know, but I just didn't think it was for me. But the lucky thing was, is I landed myself in this group, you know, a group that believes in primary purpose, a group that believes in sponsorship, a group that believes in the steps and service and all the things that Alcoholics Anonymous is about. And, you know, one of the guys that I found is my sponsor. His name is Lloyd. He's going to be the one speaking for me. And, you know, I think something everybody in the room can relate with is, you know, there's always, like, someone in Alcoholics Anonymous that you look up to. You know, maybe it's not the person that sponsors you, but either way, you see what they do, you watch them, you know. They may not know that you watch them, but you watch them. And, you know, and if it's your first day here, maybe that person already exists in your life, or maybe it's soon to come. But, you know, there was another guy that sponsored me that, you know, he had gone his own way for a little while. And but I knew, see, because I'd been watching Lloyd for my entire sobriety up until the point where my first sponsor decided to leave us. And, you know, I think in that day, there wasn't but a few hours that went by, you know, before I went to talk to Lloyd to ask him to sponsor me, because I knew that, you know, I saw the kind of man that he was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, he did things the way that just, you know, the way that I believe it should be done. Not that that's necessarily the right way, but he was the guy for me. So without further ado, I'll have him come up here.
Lloyd, alcoholic. Glad to be here. Glad to be sober. Thank you, Ryan. It's very touching. It really was. I was sitting there thinking as you were saying all those kind things about me, like, wow, hope nobody asked me for a ride after the meeting, you know? I am feeling completely whacked out and self-centered. I always get that way. And I heard a woman speaker once say that at some point God takes over. I'm like really hoping he shows up soon. And, you know, because I'm so self-centered. And, you know, I'm worried about being judged and all those things. But, you know, congratulations, man. You know, I was trying to think of a story to talk about Ryan. And, like, I really don't have anything. And I sponsor a few guys. And just like Ryan, just one of the guys I don't worry about. You know, if you sponsor people, maybe you know what I'm talking about. You know, like, I just don't worry about him. I know where he is. You know, I know what he does. He tells me. You know, last night he was at his Tampa Gladiators meeting. Not sure what exactly that is. But, you know, it sounds cool, you know. Kind of want to be there. And then, like, Monday he's at jail, you know, with a good friend of his. And, you know, he's just active in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I don't worry about him, you know. And I learn a lot from him too, you know. And you can learn a lot from the guys or girls you sponsor, you know. And I learn a lot from Ryan, and I'm just grateful he's in my life, you know. And congratulations again. And, you know, congratulations, Jessica. It's awesome. And thanks, Marilyn, for talking. It was really good. And this has been a really good meeting. But my sobriety date is October 6, 2005. And this group's my home group. I'm active in this group. I'm a butts person, I suppose. I help pick up the cigarette butts at the end of the meeting. And, you know, we're pretty serious. There's another meeting that meets here during the week, and we pick up their cigarette butts, you know. And, You know, and the only reason I mention that is because I have a good friend of mine in Philly right now, and he's, like, having trouble starting a group. You know, he's, like, going to all these different churches. And the number one reason why a church won't give him a location to have a meeting is because they always mention you guys are terrible with the cigarette butts, you know. And I was like, wow, you know, that's a good point, you know. So if we can just learn to, you know, just carry our butts over to the major butt buckets that we have across the street, you know, we wouldn't get kicked out of churches and stuff, you know. And a lot of groups get kicked out of churches, you know. But I don't know why I went on that tangent, but it's I just know that I got that position because I walked up to Stan over at the service table at the end of last month, and I said, can I participate in this meeting? You know, what can I do? And he asked me if I could do cookies, and I was like, I don't have an oven to bake cookies, you know. And he was like, all right, we'll do butts. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I did that, and then at the end of this meeting, I'm going to go up to him and ask him what I can do next month, you know, because it's important for me to participate in my home group, you know. And this group saved my life, like I heard a lot of people talk about. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. And, like, those three things have held me accountable to Alcoholics Anonymous since I got here. I found to have a sponsor and a home group very important since I've been sober this time. There's been many times where I wanted to leave Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the, you know, encouragement from sponsorship, God-inspired sponsorship, God working through my sponsor, my home group, to stay here, you know. And I'm just grateful for that, you know. And, you know, I think this isn't my first time getting sober, and I think what's different this time is that I, like, fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was, like, relating to what Jessica was talking about. And I think the Alcoholics Anonymous I fell in love with was the people that were here that welcomed me to AA, you know, when I got here, and I was detoxing, and I just needed a little bit to keep me straight, and I wanted to die, you know. And I was standing outside of a meeting, and, like, five or six guys came up to me, and they welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. They stuck their hand out to me, and, you know, and they were my age, and my the biggest thing I could never get sober was because nobody my age was getting sober, you know. And, you know, God sent me five guys my age, you know, and said, look, you know. And that's the first time I thought to myself, you know, wow, Alcoholics Anonymous will work for me, you know. And that's the Alcoholics Anonymous I fell in love with, you know. And that's really the Alcoholics Anonymous I hope from time to time I represent. I'm by no means a pillar in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's people in this room, new people that do Alcoholics Anonymous, 100 times better than I ever will. And I just try my best to do what they, I just see them. I see them running around. I see them stacking chairs at the end of the meeting. I just follow them. I try and do what they do, you know. I see them sticking their hand out to a new person, and I just try and do that. And that's kind of been my sobriety since I got sober, just watching people do what they do and try and do it the best I can on a daily basis, you know. And, you know, there's some guys in this room that I look up to, you know, and I want what they got, you know. So, again, I try to do what they do, you know, and I'm not the best at this, you know. And I just try my best on a daily basis, you know. And haven't always felt that way, that's for sure, you know. I started drinking and using when I was 11. I had my first drink down in the Everglades and in South Florida. I was a pretty normal kid growing up. I played a lot of baseball, was an all-star MVP, pitcher, catcher, shortstop, played on travel teams. You asked me what I wanted to do when I got older was to play professional baseball. And I did that till I was about 11, you know. And, alcohol just became more important right away. But I had my first drink. I remember it like it was yesterday because alcohol did for me what it didn't seem to do for my friends that day. It set me free, you know. And we were in the Everglades, and I remember my buddy had approached me, says, we're going to drink today, and there was no battle in my head, should I, shouldn't I? I just was like, okay, I'm going to drink, you know. But I did ask him a question. I was like, what happens when you drink? And the best answer you can give me, you know, he was 11, he never drank too. He's like, well, you get this warm feeling inside. And I was like, I want that, you know, I just want to feel different, whatever, you know. So we went to this convenience store. We called it the Mexi Mart. We went in there, and, you know, I went to the cooler. I grabbed a six-pack of Ice House because I heard that was some good beer. And then I asked the guy at the counter, I said, what's some good wine? And he's like, MD 2020. And I grabbed a bottle of that. And I walked up to the counter, and I put the booze on the counter, and he sold it to me, no questions asked. And it reminded me, I'm like 11 years old, I'm 90 pounds soaking wet. So that was like the coolest thing that ever happened to me up until that point. And, you know, we went back to the fishing hole, and we drank two Ice House, and we started passing the bottle MD 2020 around. And, you know, my experience the first time I drank, you know, I caught a lot of fish, you know, and the reason was up until that point, I wasn't trying, you know, and alcohol, it made me get out of myself, you know, and really took away that self-centered fear of doing things like baiting the hook or something like that, you know, and, you know, and I had a record day, and I'm gonna be honest with you, I caught a lot of fish. There were a lot of bass, and they were close to 10 pounds. And the reason I say that, because for the longest time, my story, I used to say I caught had a record day. I caught 10 bass. They were all over 10 pounds. Somebody approached me at the end of the meeting and said, really? Did you really catch 10 bass, and they were all over 10 pounds? And no, they weren't. Probably not. But, you know, so if, you know, if there's one thing I'm honest about during this whole talk, I'm going to be honest with what I caught today. And that's for sure. So nobody approached me at the end of the meeting. But, you know, and I remember, you know, I remember just I remember I was drunk, you know, like completely loaded. And I went home. I remember that. And we had like a fish fry. And my mom was cooking like with seasonings and spices and stuff. And I remember I was like trying to hide from her. And I was in the living room. And I don't know. The first time I drank, I blacked out, threw up, came to in a cold shower. And my sister smacked me across the face, told me I'd been in there for hours. There was puke all around me. And, you know, I just remember feeling terrible. I remember feeling like death. And I remember swearing off alcohol completely, like it talks about in the Big Book. The first time I ever drank. You know, I didn't think maybe I suck at drinking. I really thought I'm never going to do that again. And I laid by the toilet for 24 hours. And, you know, I got back up. And what I found out was, like, the fear of sixth grade came rushing right back up to me. And I knew I had to drink again, you know. And I just hate – being sober was just unbearable. I hated it, you know, and at an early age, you know. And it was apparent by the time I was 15 years old that I needed to get loaded on a daily basis. By the time I woke up at 15 years old, I was so full of fear. I was just scared, worried, and, you know, had always insecure doubt, didn't really know how to stand. And I needed to do something. It didn't matter if I had to be at school, work, or whatever. The chances are I'm not making it if I'm not loaded. And, you know, it went on like that for many years. You know, I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 18. You know, not by choice. My mom took me to a treatment center, said I could stay there for or live on the streets. I ended up staying there, and they took me to meetings, brought me to meetings. I thought it was just a bunch of bullshit, you know. And really, if you're new and you're thinking this is really just a bunch of bullshit, no, it's 100 times better than anything you can think of, you know. Just know that the more you put in, the more you'll get out, the bigger this thing gets, you know. I've seen things here in Alcoholics Anonymous that I haven't seen anywhere else, you know. I've seen people like myself, I shouldn't be sober, you know. I see people like Ryan Loftus get sober, you know. He's terrible drunk, you know. He shouldn't be sober, that's for sure. And, you know, there's people here that come here literally crawl into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and they don't want to be here, but their lives change, and they work the steps, and their lives get better. But, you know, I thought I was stupid. I was 18, you know. I thought, you know, I left the treatment center knowing, like, I got to get some control under my drinking, you know. This is terrible. I don't ever want to go back there. But to make a long story short, I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for like 4 years. I went to many different treatment centers, halfway houses, three-quarter way houses, detoxes, and I couldn't get sober, you know. And the reason I couldn't get sober because I could never admit I was an alcoholic, you know. And Alcoholics Anonymous has nothing to offer you if you're not alcoholic, you know. And that's something you got to decide, you know. And I'm just glad what ended up happening after so many missed opportunities of trying to get sober. I wound up in Tampa. I detoxed on my mom's couch. My buddy called me. He said, you know, my uncle bought a hotel in Kissimmee, Florida. He's like, why don't you come down here, help renovate it, and you can make some money. And, you know, he had some of that stuff that had put me on my mom's couch for the past week. I was detoxing. So I was like, yeah, I rolled up some pennies. I went down there, and we worked. We made some money, and it was like Friday, and we went out to drink at the Wing House, and, you know, we drank a lot, and, you know, I had a lot of, like, blackouts were far in between, but towards the end of my drink, it seemed like I had a lot of blackouts towards the end. But I do remember coming up with a great idea that we needed to play cards, and, you know, my buddy's like, all right, let's go to the Hard Rock. So we went back to the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa. I remember playing some cards. I remember waking up in the passenger seat of my car. We were about to rear end the car. Speedometer said 120. I looked at the person I let drive my car. He was sleeping. I woke him up, and we spun out on the side of I-4 doing like 120, you know. And all that happened was my bumper ripped off my car and three flat tires. And it happened in slow motion. I remember it was like a semi-truck. I remember there was like cars all around us. I remember like one more second of me not waking up or one more inch, we would have hit that car, and who knows what would have happened, you know. Might not be here today. But I remember I jumped out. He jumped out. We ran around the car. He handed me my keys. He said, you were driving. I remember, clearly, I wasn't driving, you know. But But I just remember thinking to myself, wow, I hear a lot about a moment of clarity. And I think I had a moment of clarity there. I had a flashback of all the different halfway houses that I lived in. And I lived in a halfway house, and I had a lot of roommates, and I watched a lot of people come in and get their lives together. And I remember I had, a flashback of several different people. I remember somebody would come in, and, it'd be a couple of days later, and he'd be out the door, and I'd be like, what are you doing? He'd be like, going to a meeting. And I'd be like, loser, you know? And then it'd be a couple of days later, and I'd, see him, and he's, fresh skinned and glowing, and he'd have his big book in his hand. I'd be like, what are you doing? He'd be like, oh, I'm gonna go hang out with my sponsor, we're gonna work the steps. And I'd be like, oh, that's stupid, and then it'd be a couple days later, and I'd be like, what are you doing? He'd be like, I'm going to my job, I have a job, what do you do? And I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna sit on the couch all day, and I just remember, so I had this moment of clarity, wow, if I want to live a good life and be successful member of society or whatever, I need to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, And I didn't go back the next day, but what ended up happening, I made it back to my mom's couch, I started detoxing, and I would fall asleep at night, and I'd wake up in the middle of the night, and my lower back would be killing me. I don't know what that, I would wake up in the middle of the night, paralyzed from the waist down. I would have to flip my legs over. I couldn't have a good night's sleep, so I started praying. I just started praying to whatever, and I would say, please just help me have a good night's sleep, not having any clue what I was doing, that was the last week of my drinking. October 5th, I woke up, I went in the bathroom floor, I laid down on the floor, and that's how I started my morning. Most mornings, just, pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, just laying on the bathroom floor, what am I going to do with my life today, having no clue. My cell phone rang, it was the only person I knew in Tampa, his name was Scully, and the only social skills I had at the time was to make a drug deal over the phone, and I started doing that, and I was in the living room, and it was 11 o'clock in the morning, and my mom, she works 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, pretty normal, and I'm in the middle of the living room making this drug deal, and my mom comes down, she looks me in the eyes, she says, don't do it, and she starts to cry. And, just that disappointment again, there was so many other times that I saw that disappointment in my mom's eyes. I didn't tell you about the time I stole this ring, pawned it for $50 and for her to approach me next day and be like, what happened to my $5,000 ring? I didn't tell you about the time I stole so much money from her checking account that her mortgage payment bounced. I didn't tell you guys about the time that I stole a car, totaled it, pushed it back into her driveway for half to wake up in the morning just to find her car undrivable, and have to walk 3 miles to work, That's the type of son I was, I didn't care. I was selfish, self-centered, and all I could say is, so what, And here she is again, standing in front of me, crying her eyes out, telling me not to do it, And, she's like, I don't know what I'm going to do with you, but I'm going to do something. And I didn't feel like, I felt like I needed some time to get my stuff together. I'll leave, no problem. But I was like, I'm alcoholic, I need to go back to AA, And she's like, all right, call now. And she busted out the phone book, and she found the number to AA, and I remember I called it, and I was like, and somebody picked up. He's like, hey, this is Tim at Central Office. I'm like, hey, Tim, my name's Lloyd. I'm visiting from South Florida. I have 3 years sober, and I need to find a meeting. And as I was talking to him, I snuck out the back door. I met Scully at the pool. I went back. I was still talking to him. He told me about a 5:45, and I was like, oh, all right, cool. Yeah, I'm going to go to that one. And I hung up, and I told my mom I'm going to go to this 5:45 meeting. And, she got off my back. She went to work. She was so happy. And, I ate my breakfast. It just happened to be 10 Vicodin. And, and for some reason, and I was gonna go get some quartz, get in my car, and drive to either Orlando or Daytona. I had two friends left. That's exactly why they were my friends. They lived in Orlando and Daytona. They were hundreds of miles away from me. Couldn't burn bridges with them. And, for some reason, I passed out on the couch. I didn't pack anything up. And I woke up at 5 o'clock on October 5th, 2005, and I was like, that's strange, why'd I pass out, I was just forgetting that I ate 10 Vicodin, but, so I was like, all right, I'm going to go to that meeting, and I rolled up to Club 3333, had fixed a flat in 3 of my tires and no bumper on my car, and I'm like, I better find somebody, I'm either going to get plugged in or I'm going to find a girl that falls in love with me, she can take care of me the rest of my life, I remember telling my sponsor about that, and I remember him saying, I don't think God cares what your motives are, just get here, whatever your motives are for being here today, just find something and hold on to it, and, you probably get sober, that's what happened to me, I put my head against that wall, and I sat down there, I was like, man, I'm back in AA at 21, this sucks, nobody's getting sober at 21, it was a small meeting, and I shared in that meeting how alcohol defeated me, and I didn't know how to live without drinking, and, nobody approached me after the meeting, but somewhere in Alcoholics Anonymous, through the meetings I've been through, they told me to thank the chairperson at the end of the meeting. And I walked up to the chairperson, I stuck my hand out, and I said, hey, man, I'm Lloyd. Thanks for your service. He said, hey, man, I'm Mike. What are you doing here? I said, hey, man, I don't know. He's like, hey, man, I can tell. And, He knew exactly what to do with me. You know, it just started pouring out me. I'm like, I'm alcoholic. I don't know how to live without drinking. I'm bad. You know, I don't know. I can't go on any longer. And he knew exactly what to do with me. And he took me across the street to La Teresita. He split a Cuban sandwich with me. He bought me a cafe con leche. And he started telling me about alcoholism. And he told me that, you know, I said, what do I got to do? You know, he's like, well, he said he's not going to be able to help me, that I need to find a higher power. I said, how do I do that? You know, he's like, you go home tonight, you get on your knees, you ask God to help you stay alive, help you stay sober, and help you get to the noon meeting the next day, you have a shot, you know? And to me, the solution at the time was to, you know, go home, rob my mom, go back down south and try and control my drink. And the solution to me wasn't go home and pray. I was detoxing. I needed a little bit to keep me straight, you know? I knew exactly what that was going to take that away. It was another drink, you know? But for some reason, I went home, I said that prayer, and I made it to the noon meeting the next day. And I'm grateful for that meeting. I walked into that room. The format of it's a big book study, hundreds of years of sobriety. You know, what they do is they read a little bit out of the big book, and then, you know, those men and women shared their experience, and I started relating to the big book. And, you know, and man, it wasn't my intention to get sober, you know, and stay sober, that's for sure. Then they took me to that meeting down in St. Pete. It was Monday Night Speakers, and they told me there was going to be this great speaker there. And it was their 7th year anniversary, and, you know, and that I should come, and, you know, and I just remember hating it, you know. But I remember the speaker was good, and it was a potluck, and I was standing out. They had a break before the main speaker, and I remember I had to pick up a white chip. Or they asked for people less than 30 days sober, and I remember I had to stand up and say, I'm less than 30 days sober. Then they had the chips. So I had to get up again and go get a 30-day chip, and I remember I wasn't getting up, and, you know, this guy turned around to me and said, it's all about deflation of ego. You go get your chip. So if you're new and you're just coming back and you got up and you got a chip, man, that's, you know, that's probably one of the hardest things I had to do, you know? My ego, my pride, my arrogance kept me out there so long, you know? And, shouldn't be sober, you know. But I am, you know, and I truly believe it is because I got off my ass and I went up and got that chip, man. I don't want to. There's been so many experiences like that since I've been sober. My sponsor got me, you know, they introduced my sponsor, and he got me in the big book right away, and, you know, and when we came to a step, we worked it, and, you know, we said the third step prayer, and then after the third step prayer talks how we launch out on a course of vigorous action, I put pen to paper, and I wrote out an honest 4-step in 4 hours on his patio, and he went out of town for a week, and, you know, I was still on the fence. I was still on the fence, you know, I didn't want to be here, you know, I didn't think this would work for me. I thought about killing myself every day, and I thought about drinking. I thought about my ex-girlfriend, and she dumped me, you know, because I drank too much, and she was a cocktail waitress in a strip club. I remember being so angry at her, and, you know, you know, so my sponsor made it back, and, you know, I hung in there, you know, I shot for midnight every night, and I was miserable that week, and my sponsor got back, and he took me up to Ballast Point, and, you know, at 24 days sober, we sat down, we did a fifth step. And, you know, I'm just so grateful, you know, and he showed me how to do 6 and 7. And, you know, what I learned from that fifth step is, you know, I remember my freshman year in rehab, one of the therapists said, you're a selfish, self-centered, egotistical, grandiose mother effer. And the booze isn't working for you anymore. And I had no clue what he was talking about. But after taking that inventory, that's exactly what I was, you know. And I understand what that is today. And, you know, he showed me how to do 6 and 7. And I wrote out as honest as I could, 8-step at the time. And, you know, I started making these amends, you know, financial. When I got here, I owed everybody and my mother money. And I got this job I totally didn't deserve. And, you know, my experience with working the steps is my life got better, you know. And I don't think Ryan asked, you know, I'm not up here to tell you how good I am. You know, I think Ryan asked me to talk and tell you how good Alcoholics Anonymous is when worked out of the big book. You know, it's everything it ought to be, you know. And, again, the more you put into it, the bigger this thing gets. And, you know, it's like I've been, you know, when I was 20, I had this great job, 60K plus year, you know, and I had to leave that job because I needed a drink, you know. I remember looking my boss in the eyes and being like, yeah, this isn't working out, you know, because he made it clear that I couldn't take 30 breaks a day and take hour and a half long lunches, and I was, you know, and I was like, all right, I'll try it the next day, you know, and I couldn't do it, you know. I remember going to him and being like, yeah, this isn't working out, you know, and for him to be like, what is wrong with you? And, you know, and just being through the amends process, through working these steps, through helping other alcoholics and doing the best I can, I've been blessed with the opportunity to get back in the same profession that I was when, you know, before when I the job I had to leave, you know. And I don't think that's anything short than the hand of God. I feel like God had a hand in that. And, you know, my poor, you know, my mother, you know, who I wish, you know, she was a single mom. She raised me and, you know, my sister and, you know, all the stuff I put her through and having the opportunity to make that right with her. And for it to be her 56th birthday yesterday and I have the opportunity to take her out tomorrow for dinner, you know, that's not me. I mean, there was many birthdays that I showed up for, but, you know, she would always treat me, you know, or on her birthday. You know, I don't think it's supposed to be that way. You know, it was through, you know, it was through the men and women of this meeting that taught me to have, like, respect for, you know, a job that are, you know, and to have respect for friends and family, you know, and, you know, because that's not me, you know, and I need to ask God for help. And through that, through this program and this process, I've come to discover a power greater than myself, you know, with that I wish to call God or whatever, for lack of a better term. And, you know, it's just, it's amazing what happens here, you know, and I'm just grateful. And that's it. Thanks.